Support for the show comes from Atlassian. With a new story about AI coming out seemingly every day, it can be hard to know what it all means for you and your job. Atlassian thinks there's a lot to be excited about in the AI-powered future. Even right now, Atlassian's AI-powered software can help you boost productivity by eliminating menial tasks, generating insights, and helping you find information about projects, policies, and processes. No matter if you're a team of 2 or 2 million, or if you're around the corner or on another continent, Atlassian software keeps everyone connected and moving together as one towards shared goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher, and I'm in my prime. That's because my co-host today is journalist and anchor Don Lemon. And Don, I had to do it. I'm sorry.
I'm glad you are, because I'm not. I'm old. I'm sorry. I'm not.
You're old. You're old. You're not in your prime.
Creaky.
When was your prime? When was your prime exactly?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I'm joking around a little bit, but when I can, there were, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and I could run 10 miles and not, you know, die. But yeah, I mean, look, I think it's individual. Obviously, we're joking around, but I think it's individual. I think people get to decide when they're in their prime.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. Or we're in the prime all the time. Yeah. I've been in my prime since I was born. Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about, this is the first time you've talked since you left Santa, and I think you talked a little bit. And it's been out 4 months that you, on Twitter, actually said you'd been let go from CNN. First of all, what have you been up to? What have you been doing?
I've been going around traveling a lot, actually. I've been doing a lot of traveling, spending time with my family, my fiance and my dogs. I've been to Baton Rouge, where my family lives. I've gone to New Orleans. I've gone to Park City. And I've gone to Italy, spent some time in Europe. And I've been talking to a lot of people. People approach me all the time and talk to me about issues. But you know what? Guess what they don't really talk about?
What don't they talk about?
They don't talk about indictments. Very rarely do people talk to me about Donald Trump and indictments. They talk to me about issues that are, you know, pertinent to them in their everyday lives, like feeding their families and crime and that sort of thing.
So have you learned something? Because, you know, a lot of your shows, you did focus a lot, you know, at CNN on those kind of things. What has it taught you?
That we all live in bubbles. You think that, you know, I would sit on that anchor desk every evening, and then for a small portion in the mornings, a small amount of my time, the last part of my career at CNN. And you think every single person is paying attention, and they're, you know, they're as up to date as we are about the news and about the issues, and they're following, you know, every single development and micro development with Donald Trump in politics. And they're not. And so, as I said, very rarely do people talk to me about Donald Trump and about indictments, even with the latest indictments that are happening now. They do talk to me about, honestly, crime, homelessness, mental health, being, they're worried about walking down the street in certain parts of the country, in certain cities. And that's what, you know, they want to be able to afford their families, how high rents are, how mortgage rates. And that's what they talk to me about. And they say they miss me on CNN.
Yeah. So they, but you did spend a lot of time talking about Trump. Do you think, rethink that? Do you rethink why you did that? Because you were one of his biggest critics, I think. You reported on it every night, you and Chris Cuomo and many others at CNN. And of course, right now, it's all Donald Trump all the time on that network and a lot of cable networks, not just there.
Well, I think it was a moment then. There was a Trump moment, there was a COVID moment, but I think that people are over it when it comes to Donald Trump. I think they understand that he is at the very least unethical and possibly, you know, a criminal. And so I think people get it and they've moved on with their lives, essentially. If there is some big breaking news like the developments that happen, I think people tune in for a moment. But what I think that people have realized now is that they can be informed about, especially issues that come to Donald Trump, but they don't have to be inundated. You know, and what I've done, I mean, I have I have watched very minimal cable news over the past 4 months.
Okay. You have.
Yeah.
Has that been good for you?
It's been the best. I think the experience that I've had just traveling around the country talking to people, I think it was an invaluable lesson, and a lesson that I would not have gotten unless, you know, this happened to me at CNN. I was at a wedding in New Orleans. A bunch of my fiance's former colleague, a lot of conservative, you know, kind of bro guys, right? The Joe Rogan types. Everyone, and also in Park City, and people were shocked at how all of these guys wanted to talk to me. They wanted to have selfies. They wanted to engage. And they said, man, we never saw the side of you on CNN. You know, why not? You should go on Joe Rogan. You should do this because I think it's, you know, it's important. I would listen to you. And so that's been a very valuable lesson for me.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened. You know, there were so many reports flying around when you departed. You know, I called you and said, I think you're in trouble before it happened. Largely because it started to, things started to bubble up. And you had the Nikki Haley comment that you made about Prime, which I just joked about.
She says people, you know, politicians or something are not in their prime. Nikki Haley isn't in her prime. Sorry. When a woman is considered to be in her prime in her 20s and 30s and maybe 40s.
What are you talking about?
That's not according to me.
Prime for what?
It depends. I mean, it's just like prime. If you look it up, if you Google when is a woman in her prime, it'll say 20s, 30s, and 40s.
If you want to address that, you can. But first, I'd love you to, what happened from your perspective? And since then, Chris Licht, who called you a lightning rod at the time, was out, I don't know if it had schadenfreude for you, but talk a little bit about what happened from your perspective.
Well, I'll tell you what I've come to know now that I didn't know at the time, that more so than anything, that the CNN's the strategy and their content and what they the direction they wanted to go in, that I was not a part of that, that they did not want me to be a part of that. And I think that has, from what has played out publicly as it relates to CNN, as it relates to management and what they're doing now, I think it's obvious that they didn't want me to be a part of that. And I think that's a real issue that happened.
Mm-hmm. But that changed with Licht, right? Because they came in and he went on and on about centrist, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. You just do what you do, right? Or you make the changes and you don't talk about it. Do you think you don't fit into the new CNN, or that they made the changes? Because it's not that different from when you were there in terms of reporting and other things.
Well, I don't know. I haven't watched since I've been there. But I know when I was there, I was not a part of their strategy. And as you just said, they wanted to be centrist and they wanted to move the network in a certain direction, which was, you know, kind of a bit surprising, because I think the news is the news and it's, you know, you don't choose a direction. It just is.
Right. It just is. So what do you think people got wrong about you leaving? And what happened later is the person who had really fired you essentially, got fired.
I think that says it all. I mean, what more do I need to say? It's
mm-hmm. You haven't talked to him, have you? Sorry, dude.
No. Why on earth would I do that? I have not spoken to him. No.
You haven't spoken to him.
No.
But how do you think it vindicates you, or do you think it
Yes, I do.
Because why?
I read the story and you speak to the people who are there, and I think people get what happened. All you have to do is read the Atlantic story, read the subsequent stories that came out, and you know how it played out, and they're gone now. So do I feel vindicated in that sense? Yes, I do.
Do you feel like you made any mistakes? Because you've had over the many years, lots of anchors, not just you, have had issues, you know, said things that you didn't want. Obviously, the Nikki Haley comments, I think it was just used as a predicate to move you along, or the Vivek Ramaswamy ones, which I watched again and thought, I'm not sure what's wrong here. Particularly, it's an argument and debate, and with someone who has a particular point of view. Do you feel bad about saying those things? I think probably in the Nikki Haley comments, I'm not so sure about Vivek.
Well, let me just, I think you just said it. You've watched cable news, and especially, you know, I would sit there 3 hours, sometimes 4 hours or longer, either at night or a day, and there are no words in that you're having conversations. And anchors say things all the time that they wish, people on television say things all the time. You have said things before, I'm sure,
all
that came out wrong. that you wish you had said in a different way.
Yeah. I don't get into trouble like you did. I don't get into trouble, which is interesting.
Well, I hadn't gotten into trouble for making mistakes before because I would apologize for them or explain what I intended to say, and it would be fine because I think people understood that that's the way it works in television. And so if you, I think what you're insinuating and what you said, that there were some issues at play that I weren't aware of, I said that in my statement, you know, that I released on Twitter after I left CNN. And so I think we're saying the same thing. Yeah.
Right. And when you think about the comment about Haley, you did explain it and apologize, but you weren't allowed to say it right away. Is that correct?
If you're asking, so I'm going to speak the truth now. Mm-hmm. I was never allowed to address the issue on the air. I wish that I could have, but I was never allowed to.
Yeah, I was kept thinking if Jeff Zucker was there, it would have been in 5 seconds, you would have said, oh my God, I can't believe I'm such an asshole or something like that.
Well, yes, and I probably would have said it like that. And you're speaking my language now. The best person, the best news executive that I've ever worked for in my entire 20 some years, even almost 30 years in this business, was Jeff Zucker, who understood those things. He understood that, you know, when you're in those conversations, just as in your regular conversations that you have across a dinner table or at a restaurant, you don't always say things perfectly, and you're not going to say that on television. And he was very supportive of us, and he wanted us to not necessarily be provocative, but just to be ourselves. And if we got something wrong, we apologized, we explained it, and he supported us, and we moved on. Doesn't have to be the end of the world or a big issue unless you're looking for a reason to get rid of someone.
Yeah, actually, which is why I texted you. I was like, oh no. After I saw that one story, I was like, oh dear, oh dear, this is going to be used. So you just mentioned Zeb Zucker. I agree with you. I think he's the most, if not the most talented television executive, one of them. Do you think he should go back? I know there's rumors and that he wanted to acquire CNN. His representative associates have denied them, but it's pretty clear CNN is on the market. It feels like it's going on the market. Or maybe, you know, they aren't replacing Chris Licht yet. They have a group of people you worked with for a long time, most of them. Do you think he should buy it, or what should happen to it?
Oh, that's a big question. Look, there's this whole story in the media that, you know, I don't know if you saw it, that I was on vacation with Jeff and we were, you know, discussing.
Yes.
None of that's true. I mean, how I don't discuss CNN, and I very frequently talk about it or think about it. You know me a little bit. I look to the future. And I live in the present. I look to the future. I don't look back. I had almost 17 great years at CNN. And the last part, you know, bit wasn't so great, but you know, hey, it is what it is. Look, I'm just going to be really honest with you. There isn't a better person alive who could run CNN. And I don't know if there's anyone who could do it. I mean, look, someone can do it. I don't know if they'll do it well, but I think the best person to run CNN was and would be Jeff Zucker. Do I think he's going to go back? No. Do I think he's going to buy it? You'd have to ask him. I doubt it. I don't talk to him about those things. But why would he in this environment? And considering, you know, what's happening now, I mean, why would he want to go back, and why would he subject himself to that?
Well, there's a scenario where you could do things with it. It just because something is waning at this point doesn't mean it has to wane.
If anyone could save CNN, if it needs saving, if that's, you want to put it in that context, it would be Jeff Zucker.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I know you're not watching it, but they announced a new primetime lineup. Well, all women, except for Anderson Cooper, Abby Phillip in your old 10 p.m. slot. Do you have any advice for them? Oh, at all?
That they needed two people to replace me? Kidding.
Yeah.
I don't know what advice I would give them, because I think the environment that they're working in is different than the environment that I worked in. I was given...
Well, tell me, why is it different?
Because I was given the freedom to be me. And I didn't have to suffer with election deniers. I didn't have to platform people who weren't deserving of the platform. Now, listen, I don't know if that's what's going on with them, but I didn't have to deal with any of those things. But look, those guys are the best in the business. And Abby is very talented. Laura Coates is very talented, and
she's on at 11.
Yeah, they're gonna do things on their own. I don't think that they need any advice from me. I would just any advice I would say is, Abby, just be the great person that you are, and I would tell Laura just to be the smart attorney that she is, and just to be themselves. And
well, there's a lot of legal stuff. We are going to unfortunately talk about Trump because there is a lot of news in that. We have a lot of things to talk about actually. But let me just say, you and I. So speaking of that, when you think about where you are 17 years at CNN. You and I chatted on my old show back in 2021 in Sway in the New York Times. That in this interview where I asked where we'd find Don Lemon in 10 years. Here's what you said. Uh-oh. Let's listen to it.
Okay, so here's the thing. Don't tell anybody.
Okay, we won't.
I really love what I do. And I love being on in a time where I have almost complete editorial freedom. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could have that editorial freedom at 9. I'm not sure. But I think at 10 o'clock, I can pretty much say and do whatever I want. And I do. So I think you'll see me, you know, you might see me sort in doing the same thing, but differently. Maybe on my own network. Oh. Maybe it'll be a Don Lemon subscription network.
Oh, a Don Lemon subscription.
Manifesting.
Don Lemon Plus.
Manifesting.
Don Lemon Plus. Manifesting. Manifesting. Would you still do that? Is that in play? I'll ask the same question. Where will we find Don Lemon in 10 years?
There are a lot of things in play. Listen, I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, Kara. I was having dinner with an old friend last night who was in television, who ran a network for a long time. And he said that just recently that streaming and digital or online had surpassed linear television for the first time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
So if that gives you an indication to where I'm going, and well, I don't know if it's streaming, but it's whatever, it's going to be probably streaming and in the digital space. It doesn't mean that I don't want to work in traditional linear television anymore, especially over the next 14 months. I expect to have a voice, so stay tuned for that. But I think I want to do something next that scares the shit out of me. And I had a very successful career in cable news for a long time. I got to do and say exactly what I wanted to. I have and had a very important voice that most people don't get to hear on that platform, and still don't. And I expect that to continue. But I'm going to lean into the future of this medium and do something. Wow. That scares me.
So Don Lemon Plus. Interesting. So would that be like a show? Like, would you join Chris over at News Nation, Twitter, podcast? Or I assume you're going to join Tucker Carlson over there. I know you too. There was that back and forth right when you left. I think I wrote you, Mike, please don't.
No, it's not that. It was, look, I think because of the weird universal, the universe, the timing.
Of firing, yes.
Yeah, of both of us at the same. It was like, hey, how weird was this?
I think of you together all the time. I think about you and Tucker is just joined at the hip.
You do, but no. But Tucker and I are not friends, and I don't know what's in our future. Listen, I never say never to working with anyone. I would like to be able to reach a bigger and different audience. I don't want to keep preaching to the choir, and I don't want to keep preaching to a diminishing audience or speaking to a diminishing audience. I would like to grow my audience and be able to reach more people. As I said, I was quite frankly pleasantly surprised by how many people I thought would hate me, because a lot of them do. But after engaging with them, they were very interested and wanted to hear what I had to say. And I think I've reached some of them and changed their minds. I just think that sometimes it's very, unidimensional. When you're on television, it's just, you're doing one singular thing and people only hear one thing from you. And I think what people don't get, and especially what's happened to me over the last couple of months, is that you don't always say things that you necessarily believe, right? Meaning sometimes you have to play devil's advocate. Sometimes you have to say, well, there are people who are out there who may believe this to be true. What do you think about that? And I think we get so upset by that, by saying, oh my God, I can't believe that they're doing that, you know, or you're saying that. Doesn't mean that I believe that. Sometimes you're just being analytical, or you're trying to create a conversation, and then you end up, chastising people or canceling them. We have to stop that, because then you have fake conversations then.
Oh, I agree. I have a lot of people I disagree with.
I mean, look at you
shows.
And Scott.
I
would love to have a relationship on television or on a podcast or on whatever it is I choose to do, like you and Scott have, because it's real. And you know, there are no snowflakes in these conversations.
No, it gives people permission to disagree. You know what I mean? If he says something stupid, you know, and I go, I laugh at it and know it's what it's meant as, I think it gives people permission to calm the fuck down.
Yeah. And you know, it's not him. It's you two bantering.
Sometimes it is. Sometimes he and I had a trans argument that was quite substantive. It was interesting because we learned from each other. And he does it with me. He calls me the mayor of Wokistan, but I don't think I am. Anyway, it's an interesting relationship.
I think that's great. Sure. And we should talk about trans issues, too, because people actually talk to me about that more than they talk to me about indictments.
Oh, interesting. Okay, well, we will talk about, we're going to get into issues. Last question I have, when you say more sides of Don Lemon, that Don Lemon contains multitudes, is that interviewing? Is that singing? Is that, what do you?
It's honestly, Kara, I didn't expect to go this far, but I will a little bit. It's all of it. I mean, you'll see me doing something that is multifaceted. It will be more than one platform. And if I decide to do it, but as you know, I don't have to rush back to work, right? So, you know, I'll see, but I'm going to sort of figure it's a good time for me to figure it out. I just don't want my voice to be lost over the next 14 months. So invite me back on as often as possible.
I shall, 100%. All right, Don, let's go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the latest Trump indictment.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
One of our customers who produces pizza at a very large scale all across the world, believe it or not, they use AI to review the quality of the pizzas that are created. That goes through a workflow that scans the images of the pizzas and makes sure they visually look like what they should. So it's pretty cool.
That's Sharif Mansour, Atlassian's head of AI. Sharif thinks there's a lot for companies to be excited about on the AI-generated horizon, spanning everything from making pizza to producing podcasts like the one you're listening to now.
There'll be far more jobs created on the other side of this revolution.
Instead of a world of less, Sharif envisions an AI-powered world of more.
In everyone's day job, they're moving from doing the thing to often being an architect of the thing. It unleashes the potential of every human. And I think we can go from a world where few people have access to a high level of intelligence to a lot more people having access to this information. AI is really giving everyone on the planet more resources to do great things. And I'm very optimistic about that opportunity that lies ahead.
Transform teamwork with the power of AI-human collaboration. Start using Atlassian Intelligence for your Atlassian products like Jira and Confluence now. Learn more at Atlassian.com. That's AtlAssian.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Don, we're back for our second big story. I know you don't want to talk about Trump, but this is a big deal this week with Fonnie Willis.
It's okay.
He's calling it a witch hunt. I want to see the new Don. Surprise, surprise. After we recorded the pod earlier this week, we learned that the former president Trump had been indicted yet again, this time in Georgia. His new 13 counts include racketeering, making false statements, pressuring public officials to violate their oath of office. He's accompanied by 18 of his friends, I guess, his crew, Rudy Giuliani, Mark Meadows, and Jenna Ellis. If you're keeping score at home, that makes four indictments for Trump in the last 5 months, two federal cases, one New York criminal case, one Georgia criminal case, with a total of 91 felony counts between the four indictments. He has until noon on August 25th to voluntarily surrender to authorities, where he will have a mugshot and fingerprints. Do you think he shows up on the 25th?
That's the question, isn't it? Because that he, and then what do you do? Because there are really no levers in our Constitution that can prevent him from running. You hit upon a very interesting conversation that I've been talking to people about. Look, I think that It is good that finally Donald Trump and all of his cronies may be facing some very tough consequences, and they should. But if people are sitting at home all day in front of cable news thinking that they're going to see Donald Trump in an orange jumpsuit, I don't really think that that's going to happen. I think the consequences and the ramifications of putting a former president in jail, it's really tough because of who you're going to put him in with. What do you do with the Secret Service? What does that mean for state secrets? How does that compromise the country? So I think, you know, in the end, there will be some sort of deal made. But the question is, what do you do? What do you do with him? Is he above the law? In many ways, he is above the law. And I know that's awful. People don't want to hear it. He will go and he'll have to face the process. But then in the end, do you want someone, even if you think Donald Trump is the most terrible person on earth, he was the leader of the free world and he knows a lot. Mm-hmm. And what position does that put his family in, his family members? If he's in jail with someone and they threaten this, you tell me this, or, you know, I'm just going through the motions.
Well, most people think he'd probably be under house arrest, Mar-a-Lago.
So if he's under house arrest in Mar-a-Lago, that's fine. I think that's a good, you know, that's good if he is indeed found guilty. And I think that is when I say to people, do you really think Donald Trump is going to jail? And I say, I don't think it's going to happen. Well, they'll say, well, maybe they can strike a deal where he won't run for public office. And I think that's also a good compromise as well. The best option, I think, quite frankly, would be for him to go to jail. I'm just being a realist here. How does that happen? Are we surprised that all of these people were doing what they were doing? How long have we known this, Kara? We've known this for a long time.
There was reporting. You had it on your shows. You know, the New York Times had it. Washington Post had a lot of this. Nothing is fresh and new here from a reporting perspective, which is, it's just the detail. It's the details.
No, I reported on Fannie Willis back in February or March. I think February, that she was going to use the RICO statute to go after Donald Trump, and that it was a top-down issue for him, that you know, he was directing, or people in high positions were directing people in lower positions to do certain things, and they were going to use a RICO statute. And that, you know, what happened just a couple of days ago has just finally come to fruition. But I had that reporting exclusively a couple months ago.
Yeah, it's something we've typically seen prosecuting members of organized crime. That's how Rudy Giuliani used it to great effect, in fact, and he's now it is fantastic. It's like,
well, what do you think? That's a thing. Are you surprised by all of this? Do you think he'll go to jail?
I do not. I think the technicalities of putting a former president in jail, I think he will push it right up to the line.
I agree.
He's taking a big risk, but at the same time, as I had on Chris Christie recently in an interview, and he said he's terrified of jail. There may be a part of his lizard brain that says, this is a big risk. And he eventually went bankrupt, right? He eventually does take his medicine on some level. I think no one is above the law. I do think the law needs to be flexible in this weird, weird situation of a person who's shameless. That's really,
well, people will get upset for hearing us say that. And that's the issue that we were talking about. Even if you're just analytical,
technically
like it, right? would honestly, considering what Donald Trump has done to me, the safety of my family, death threats. I had to go and do, you know, victim impact statements in court. He called me all kinds of names, you know, the only thing he didn't, what's the word that he's using? Oh, the only thing that he didn't call me publicly was riggers, but
wow,
you know, he's using the riggers word, never mind.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But, so right. Would I like to see him in jail if he is found guilty? Yes. But do I think that that is going to happen? The technicalities, as you say, I think it's very difficult for that. But you're disappointing a lot of people by saying what you're saying. You know that, right?
Yes. No, I get it. I just, I'm like, technically speaking. Now, I do think one way it might be different is a visual state rules would allow for a televised trial here, which he would love. It also, as I said, might see a mugshot, which may be good and bad for Trump.
That's when people will care. That's when the TV ratings will go sky. That's when people will tune in to cable news or whatever it is. If he goes to court, especially in Georgia, if there are cameras in the courtroom, because he's good television, it'll be the OJ of, you know, the present OJ Simpson trial. If that happens,
right.
If there are cameras in
right.
the courtroom.
That's a really good comparison. And we know how that ended up, although I wouldn't say OJ, you know, he did get away with allegedly got away with murder. And I think his life did not get better after that. I mean, I think it never got better.
Well, I don't think Donald Trump's life got better after he became president. I never understood why people want to be president of the United States. And if I was Donald Trump and I lived in a high rise and with gold plated toilets and I had my own jet, why would I subject myself to all this scrutiny? I would just have a great life and live in the penthouse.
It's a great TV show.
Sky.
I think you're right. It's going to be a television show, and he's good television. Now, speaking of television, the first Republican primary debate is happening next week in Milwaukee. One, do you think he'd show up for it? And two, if you were doing it, you've done debates, correct?
I've done a number of them. The last one was in Detroit with the all the Democratic candidates.
So what would you ask if Trump is there and if he isn't there?
What would I ask the other candidates?
Yes. What would you ask if he wasn't there?
My question would be the same to even if he was there or wasn't there. I would ask them why they continue to support, because many of them supported him for a long time. And now they're just starting to say, you know, the election wasn't stolen and Donald Trump isn't right, you know, and they still hedge. So I would ask them that question, why they continue to support someone who has, you know, been indicted four times, who has been impeached, who tried to overthrow the government, who encouraged an insurrection, who says the nastiest things about not only them, but about their families, why they continue to support. And if they continue to support someone like that, are they qualified to be the leader of the free world?
Oh, okay. What would you ask him? What would you ask him?
Why he thinks he's above the law? Why all of the very best people that he put into place turned out to be the very worst people and ended up either in jail or under indictment? I would ask him why he cares more about himself than the country. And I would ask him why he continues to co-opt the most vulnerable people in our society and why he's a racist, why he is a sexist.
Would you use that term?
Yes. I would, because I asked him in 2016 if he was racist, and he said he wasn't. And I would ask him why he lied to me, because, you know, as it turns out, the evidence shows that he absolutely is. I think I was the first person on television to say that. I opened my show one night by saying the president of the United States is racist.
I remember that. That was a big risk.
But where's the lie?
Although, you know, CNN did benefit, as did other cable news from covering him. He's holding a major news conference this Monday at Bedminster saying, you know, proof. Should the media cover it? They have to, right? He's the front runner.
The media should cover it. I don't think they have to do it live. Mm-hmm. I think that they can, you know, we don't cover when you know, I'm not in cable news anymore, but you don't have to cover every single event live. And there's a reason for the 7-second delay, or you can get the information, look it over, and then disseminate it afterwards and add context to it, which I think is a responsible thing to do. But I don't like giving, you know, dictators or liars or insurrectionists or election deniers. I don't like giving them a platform, especially not live. And I think we learned our lesson in 2016 by running live Trump town halls when it was all lies, and those things penetrate.
They do. But now he's the front runner, though. How do you avoid that? I think about this all the time. How do you
You can cover him.
Someone's like, don't platform care. I'm like, how do you not talk about a man who's at 54% or whatever the number he's at?
Well, you can talk about him, but again, you don't have to put all of his lies on in real time. Twitter deplatformed him.
Well, now not. Actually, they helped him. They tried to help him avoid. Yeah. Jack Smith had to get a lot of Twitter data, Elon Musk did that. You know, slowed it down, slow rolled.
I think you have to talk about him, but you know, we had the same issue when for Kanye. You know, do you platform him when he's making anti-Semitic remarks? It's a little bit different when you're the front runner and the former leader of the free world. It's a little bit different, but I think you've got to be careful, and you have to measure. You have to be very careful and very measured about how you cover him. You don't have to, put on every tweet or every, Truth Social post that he puts out. You don't have to do those things. There's a reason for that. You have standards and practices, and, you take things through an editorial process.
Right.
I think that news organizations have to do that. They've got to be responsible. You know what I would ask Donald Trump, though? I wonder what your mother, what do you think your mother would think of you?
She seemed rather passive.
And what you're doing and what you've done.
Mm-hmm. She'd love me. He'd answer, what do we do then? She'd love me, Don. I always anticipate what people will say.
Let's say she'd love you. You think she'd love the way you speak, you know, about whatchamacallit's wife? You think she'd love what you were found guilty of for E. Jean Carroll? Would she love that?
Yeah, you'd have to be prepared. I'll tell you, that's the one. Because, you know, Elon Musk's mom is very supportive of all the things he says. And I, you know, I saw her
recently, by the way.
Did you?
Said hello, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, she's supportive of him. She does. Yeah. She attacked me for being very normally critical about his COVID policies at his companies.
It's interesting because he says it's okay to criticize him. But, you know, my mom would probably be a little bit upset too, but. My mom would also tell me the truth about myself.
That's what I do. I told my sons, I said, you pull anything like this, it's over for you. It's over. My son took my daughter's mermaid this morning, one of my kids, and that would not stand in my home this morning.
Did they see Barbie?
Not the little ones. The older ones did. The two older ones did.
And they loved it. Did you see it?
You know what? I loved it. I loved it. Let me tell you, I'm in Provincetown right now, and it is a Barbie summer here, as it is everywhere.
The boys are wearing pink.
Everything. Everybody. It's a Barbie and a Ken summer. Ken and Barbie. And you can imagine what they're doing here with that. They're enjoying themselves in quite a lot of ways. But let me get to another few stories in that regard. You mentioned there's two things I want to talk about. One is the trans issue. You know what I mean? Like here, let me tell you, we took a picture of my son with there's a lot of trans people here, a lot of drag queens, et cetera. A beautiful picture. And my wife didn't want me to post it because she's like, I don't want us to get called groomers. I don't want it linked to a thing. And I thought, fuck them. Like, why can't I post? It's a wonderful picture. You can't see his face. It's a beautiful picture. And the fact that we're thinking of it with all, like, talk about what people are talking to you about trans issues.
Well, there are people who are very supportive of the LGBTQ community who have some concerns about, you know, what your wife said. And listen, I think people should be supportive of the LGBTQ community, but I don't expect every business to throw up a pride flag. And I don't know if it's their business that they should. I would rather have their support and votes. I would rather have them as an ally rather than alienate them. And I think there are a lot of people who are supporters of the LGBTQ community and of the trans community who feel alienated by some of the things that are happening. Whether that's fair or not, that's the reality. I had this conversation on Sunday with family members of my fiance who are, you know, one of them had a Bud Light. And I said, oh, you're still drinking Bud Light, like jokingly. He goes, yeah. And they talked about it. And they're like, look, I support the LGBTQ community, but there are real consequences for what happened. Yeah. Look at what happened to the profits.
You know, quarterly sales fell at Target for the first time in 6 years, due in part to the backlash.
And Bud Light lost 10% of their profits.
Yeah.
Or Budweiser. And as a Bush.
Yeah, now they're moving back again. They're moving back again. Moving
It'll
forward.
Come back.
Yeah, they're going to fine tune their approach to Heritage Months in terms of displays. CEO Brian Cornell said on an earnings call that consumers you target as their happy place. The company will do what it can to lean into that moving forward. I'm not sure why.
I don't think you can pin that 100% on what happened.
No, you can't. Yeah, but in Bud Light's case, it led to $395 million in lost U.S. sales. It's kind of ridiculous. Why is this trans issue becoming such a big issue from your perspective?
I think it's, look, it's, how do I say this without getting, you know, even, you know, members of my community are upset. The whole trans issue is sort of new to a lot of people, right? And so, you know, one day it won't be. And so people have a lot of questions about it. You know, just as a journalist asking questions for people who may not have all the knowledge, I would get yelled at and screamed at and accused of having some sort of internalized homophobia because I was asking questions for people who didn't know. And so I think that you have to, you know, I often felt like the African-American authority, right, being the only person of color in primetime on a cable. And, you know, I felt like I had to answer questions about being Black in America. And I had to ask questions coming out early in the media about being gay. And sometimes you just have to do that. And you have to understand that people don't know. And if you can offer them some information, you do it. And you know,
Was it upsetting sometimes? Did I get sick of it sometimes? Yes, I did, but that's the only way that people learn. And so I think you have to take people, you have to meet people where they are, and it can be frustrating. And I think sometimes with the trans issue, people get really sensitive and they don't understand that this is a new and very difficult issue for people to understand. It just is. I wish it wasn't that way, but it just is. And it, you know what, Kara? Quite frankly, it's a tough issue for even members of my community. You know, they don't get the pronouns. They don't get to the, well, are trans people gay? Are they straight? They're not necessarily this. Why are they part of the community? You've heard that.
Yes, a lot.
And so, yeah. You know, can you, we would like heterosexual people to be able to understand everything mm-hmm. all the time, but mm-hmm. they don't. And sometimes they just have questions.
Sometimes my feeling, what I tend to do is say, what do you care what people call themselves? Why is this an issue? Why are you totally all agree. Wrapped around an axle about this? Like, what do you care if people want to call themselves Phyllis or they? I don't care. It's like, it's hard for you. Big deal. Like, it's hard for you to pronounce names of certain people too, right? And you're just going to have to, that kind of thing. I've had lots of discussions with people about this, and I usually tend to be like, tell me how it affects you. And then they sort of get drawn into a better conversation than you're a fucking idiot. I'm thinking you're a fucking idiot, but I'm not saying that in some
ways. It's a big and important issue, the trans issue. Listen, and I am extremely supportive of the trans community. And as you know, right now, we deal with trans issues probably more than any other issue within the LGBTQ community. If you go to any event for the LGBTQ,
well, they're under siege with laws.
They're under siege. And so I'm very supportive. I don't understand why people have such an issue with it. I understand why they're curious about it. I don't understand why they have such an issue with it, because it's a very small part of our population.
Candidates like Ron DeSantis and others gin it up. And now, of course, they're backing off of it. It's not working particularly. Speaking of which, a lot of people are talking this week about the 2009 film, The Blind Side, which is supposedly based on a true story, but maybe not so much. As a reminder, this was a movie starring Sandra Bullock, who won an Oscar for a role, about Leanne Tui, who brought homeless teenager Michael Orr into her family. Orr, now former NFL player, is alleging that Tui family never actually adopted him, instead put him into a conservatorship and exploited him for years. The Tui family is denying those claims, is making a few new claims of their own, even mentioning a shakedown for $15 million. Michael Lewis seems to be backing, who wrote the book The Blind Side, a very well-known journalist, saying that nobody made money from this movie. I think that was one of the things, whether they made money from the book and the movie. You interviewed Leanne back in 2013 ahead of, yes, you did, of Michael playing in the Super Bowl that year. Do you remember it or not?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
Oh my God.
I'll be honest with you, I don't.
I do this all the time. I do this
I know people say, oh, you interviewed such and such. I was trying to remember if I interviewed someone recently. I think it was the two ladies that are involved in the Georgia case, you know, the
yes,
whole
election. Yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I said, did I interview her or did I read like a transcript of her? And I can't remember.
I do that too.
I was on television at least 2 hours a night, 5 days a week. And guests come in and out, and I don't remember. I don't remember interviewing her, but I'm sure she's a very nice lady. I don't remember it, though.
Do you have any thoughts on this? I only brought it up because you did interview her.
I want to see what happens with the lawsuit, because people allege things all the time, and, you know, we have to see what happens. I'm not saying that that's this case, but that's what a journalist does. You wait for all the facts to come out. And if there is any money to be made or gotten from, you know, from Michael Orr, I think Michael Orr should get that money.
Right.
And I think he was an adult at the time, and he should have been allowed to make his own decisions as an 18-year-old person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whether he got the money or lost it or saved it or whatever, I think it should have been his own decision.
I think one of the more interesting parts of it is how he was portrayed in that movie is kind of thick and dumb, and the white people teach him.
Well, it's a white savior complex.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like, yeah. But a lot. Now, when I saw it the other day, it's interesting when you rewatch things. It's on TV all the time, which is interesting. I was like uncomfortable suddenly. You know what I mean? Like, I guess
I was uncomfortable watching that movie from the beginning. I love Sandra Bullock. I thought she did a good job. I don't think she won an Oscar, didn't she?
Yes,
I don't think that she should give her Oscar back, because she only did her job. She's not involved in that. There was a book, a screenplay, and she did her, and then the movie, she did her job. So I don't think, props to Sandra Bullock. I really like her. I think she's amazing. But
The whole movie about the white savior thing was always uncomfortable for me. And I remember when I was writing my book and an editor, I talked about, I forget, there was something that happened and there was this little white kid. I went back and I read it and the editor and I said, I don't want to do this because this makes this kid seem like a white savior. And they were like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. All right, you know, let's work on that. But I went back, you know what I did recently? I went back and watched. I watched the Rock Hudson documentary. I think it was it on HBO or something? And so it got me onto Dynasty. Uh-huh. And I went back and I watched Dynasty from the very beginning.
No.
And there was the whole character with Steven, the gay son. And I felt differently about the series than when I watched it originally.
What did you feel? What's the difference?
The way that the character was portrayed was terrible. You know, he went back and forth about being gay and straight. You know, the dad, which is Blake Carrington, which is John Forsythe, killed the son, killed the son's boyfriend and got away with it. And then through his entire life, he was embarrassed about his son being gay. It was like, Jesus, what the fuck, man? This was terrible. And this was the 80s. I said, no wonder people didn't come out then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it was, I remember watching and it was always, you know, sad gay people. You remember?
I did not like John Forsythe's character. More to, you know, Joan Collins.
Yeah, I'll give you a new one in your free time, Don, until you decide whether to hook up with Tucker Carlson or not.
Can't believe we're talking about Dynasty. And Tucker Carlson.
Right. Go watch Three's Company. Literally 90 rape jokes a second. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, and he had to, in order to live with two women and be, he had to be gay.
But then when they're talking about like getting women, it's very like, hubba hubba, give her a drink. Like, you're like, what? Like, when you watch it, you're sort of like, oh no.
Kara, that's all I watch is old television, and it's so terrible.
Don, watching old television. Go watch West Wing again. Go, that'll work. That stands up.
I love West Wing.
All right, my last question here, and then we're going to get to predictions because we're almost done, is who would you want to interview right now? You're a very good interviewer. You did tons. You don't even remember interviewing Leanne Toohey.
I don't. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Who would you want to interview right now? Right now.
Besides you?
Yeah.
Right. Bonnie Willis.
Oh, okay.
I would want Bonnie Willis, Alvin Bragg, and Jack Smith.
Oh.
I would like to sit down with all three of them.
Wow. They would never do that. You know that, Don. You're aware.
But I would like to. I would actually... I would interview Donald Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, but it would be the most uncomfortable interview that you have ever seen.
Oh, I bet. Oh, my God. You know where I would do it? As I've said, if I interviewed him at Mar-a-Lago with like velvet ropes, with let him bring his crowd in. Think about
you that. You would. Mar-a-Lago in a bathroom?
No, not in the bathroom.
With a shower curtain?
Let's go see the bathroom, sir. I call him sir a lot, and I would have it in the middle of the lobby at Mar-a-Lago, and there would be velvet ropes around us so that people could watch.
Yeah, you know I would do it. I would do it with his crowd. I would not be afraid of his crowd, as a matter of fact.
I would do it
at a Trump rally. I wouldn't care.
Oh, you might be a little more trouble than me in any case. All right, Don, one more quick break, and you have to come back with a prediction, okay?
Okay, all right.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until...
The Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
But that's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Support for this show comes from the Harvard Business Review. You know, there's this idea in business that some people are born to be leaders. You either have it or you don't. But leadership, like any skill, can and should be learned over time. Whether you've climbed to the top of the corporate ladder or are just starting out, you'll find valuable insights at Harvard Business Review. Harvard Business Review is a leading destination for smart management thinking. And on their website, hbr.org, subscriptions are just $10 a month, which gives you unlimited access to the same level of expertise. Things like case studies, newsletters, podcasts, articles written by some of the world's top minds. I use HBR in my research when I do articles or when I'm thinking about what to talk about on Pivot. I find them really interesting. I find them complete. I find them different. And you can find all kinds of industries covered. While much of Harvard Business Review's content is available for free after signing up at their site, subscriptions to unlimited content start at only $10 a month. What a bargain. Go to hbr.org/subscriptions and enter the promo code PIVOT right now to get 10% off your subscription. Again, save 10% off your HBR subscription. Go to hbr.org/subscriptions and enter the promo code PIVOT.
Okay, Don, let's hear a prediction.
Okay, here's my prediction. I predict that even with all of the indictments, that Donald Trump will be the nominee because they have no other choice. The only person who is really speaking truth right now is Chris Christie, and the Republican Party
Will Hurd a little bit
I doesn't just seem to want him. Will Hurd is a bright guy. I'm not sure he has the support of the party
and
the star power, sadly, to win a presidential election at this point. I think it will be tough for the Republican Party to win. I predict that Joe Biden will win the next election.
All right. Oh, that's a good one. Okay. Joe Biden will win again, once again. He wins by not saying anything. Like, he just sits on the beach and he seems to go up in the polls.
Yeah, that's another thing that people are talking about, but that's for another time.
Yeah, I know. The age thing, that we've discussed that many times. But
you've discussed it on the podcast. Yeah.
Think it's a big deal? Big deal?
I do think it's a big deal. Listen, I don't, you know, it makes me uncomfortable talking about people's age. My mom is 80 and she's a very young 80. I think, Joe Biden has, he has the stuttering thing that we talked about on top of what happens. And his people have to stop letting him fall down, putting obstacles in his way or what have you.
Yeah, well, he's pretty fit. I have to tell you, he's pretty fit.
He is pretty fit. Listen, I think that Joe Biden is a very smart man. I think that Joe Biden is doing a great job. If you look at what he's doing in office, what he's accomplished, he's doing a really good job, despite all the criticism that he gets. But what I'm saying, again, I'm being analytical. I'm not saying that I agree with this. People are talking about his age, and that is a concern for people I meet. Now, if you speak to someone like my mother, who is, a diehard Joe Biden fan, she'll say, I don't care. I like that he's old enough, he's older and he has wisdom, and that's important for a president. And I think she's right. But there are a lot of people who are concerned about his age. Joe Biden is concerned about it. He even said that he's concerned about it. So, he knows that it's an issue. So I don't
think think he's going to win, because now the Republicans are trying to focus on Kamala Harris, obviously, saying she'll be the real president, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that is, people talk about that as well. I think people would like Kamala Harris to be a little bit stronger, to have.
This is what they're saying to you.
Yes. To be a little bit stronger, to have more accomplishments under her belt, to be seen, to be forward facing a little bit more. The concern is that Joe Biden will drop her, and then he won't get the black support, and then blah, 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 blah. The whole thing.
I don't
lean into any of that, but I'm just telling you what people say.
But you still think he's going to win, and Donald Trump will not.
Yeah, I think he'll win. I think Donald Trump will not, but who knows?
And then you and I could go to Mar-a-Lago and interview him after that.
I would love to. I'd do it with you.
We'll make a Donald Trump sandwich.
Let's try to do that. So what do you think? What's your prediction?
My prediction? I'm going to go separately, not on Donald Trump, but on the writer's strike. I feel like it may settle by October 15th. I think there's some pain starting to feel by the studios, who are in a better position from a leverage point of view. I think there's a lot of pain from writers and actors, and I don't think they're calling them rich people is really working particularly well with the public. And I think they have to settle on some level and maybe push certain things down the road. I don't know. I just feel like maybe by October, they'll have to be settled. First will be the writers, then the actors. That's why I'm saying I think the writers will settle soon, and then the actors by then, because they have to walk back. I interviewed Fran Drescher, a lot of stuff they've said, that, not walk it back, but tone it down. That they're a bunch of monopoly men, which may or may not be true. And they have been taking a lot of the value. And so I do think it's going to, settle before the new year. Now, I didn't think. I thought January 15th was.
I need to get my Don Lemon reality show into production before they come back with the content.
Whoa,
right?
Are you doing a reality? That would be so good. What would you call it?
I'm joking. I don't know. I'm joking. Lemon life. I have no idea. Lemon life. When life gives you lemons, that's what it
means. When
life gives you lemons.
Oh my God, can I be in your reality show? Like we can move into a house in Provincetown and like you'd have lesbians around, some trans people. We'll bring Ron DeSantis in after he loses, the nomination.
Would you watch that?
Oh, us with Ron DeSantis in a house in Provincetown? Are you kidding? It sells itself.
It would be my family, my dogs, you, and what do we have? You said we have some
Ron DeSantis.
Oh, we've got Ron DeSantis.
Yeah, in the attic. Like flowers in the attic. We keep them up there and let them out every night.
No, he's like, what is it? No, is it It or Thing?
Thing.
The Addams Family.
Oh, God, Don, that would be a lot of fun. Anyway, if you need any help figuring out your future, as you know, I understand these things rather well. So if you need any podcasting help, if you're going to do that, you should go on Joe Rogan. It's not so much with Tucker. I'm sorry. I think you should rule that one out.
Would you watch that?
Tucker?
Yeah.
I think he's a nasty piece of work. I think maybe back in the day. Sure. I used to like Crossfire. But I think
how many people have proposed that Tucker and I have an event and that we do it live streaming and, it's like a prize fight?
Here's how I feel like it. It'll diminish you and not him. That's I think just like Mark Zuckerberg in the cage fight, it diminishes Mark and not Elon. And I think it diminishes you and not him. That's what I think. I think he gets a lot of purchase out of it and you do because his fans are really the lowest group of people sometimes. Some of them, not all of them, but I think it diminishes you. I don't know. Maybe it could be if he comes back to the way he used to be, but I think he's walked down that road rather far. Speaking of racist remarks, sexist remarks, et cetera, attacking people.
What do you think of Twitter? I think Twitter is, my gosh, it's an enormous platform that could do so much good. And it's important, it has so much importance, especially to people who don't live in democracies, right?
Yep, agree.
Around the world. And if Elon Musk could and Linda Yaccarino could just get it right.
I'm not confident that's going to happen.
You're not?
No, I don't. I'm sorry to say, I was one of the people, as you know, that thought it was a great thing. And then he's really turned it into a real shit show. So,
because I hear nothing anymore about Threads.
Really interesting. I like Threads quite a bit.
I'm not saying I like it or dislike it. I'm just saying when people have issues or, if there's a big deal, people go to Twitter still. If there's an announcement, people go to Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a habit. I don't know. It could be great, but I don't think I don't think he can make money, so it doesn't really matter. And if he wants to own it like he owns a yacht or a baseball team, fine. A losing baseball team, that's fine. He's rich and he makes a lot of money from other things. So sure, I guess. I don't know, Don. You love the Twitter. You haven't been on it lately.
No, I'm not. I stopped using Twitter during the Trump era when he was president and people started attacking
me.
No, not really. I don't. I have someone who does social media for me, and I'm going to go back to doing my own social media. I think now it's a little bit less toxic.
Try Threads. I think it's good. Stay on Instagram.
Yeah. I'll go back eventually. But anyway, I hope I did okay because I'm kind of rusty.
Yeah. No, you're good. No, I was just telling someone you were a pro. Anyway, Don, that's the show. You can come on anytime. I got half yay Don Lemon on Twitter and half that awful man on and on about you.
Well, that's pretty good, don't you think?
That was good. I felt like it was fine. I wrote back, go fuck yourself. I'll have who I want on this show. Thank you. That's really what I said. I'm like, get your own fucking show. And see, I'm cursing a lot here now. Anyway. All right. I got to get back to Carnival. Everyone's all dressed. There's a lot of Kens outside.
Is that what you're doing?
No, I'm not. We're going down to a family reunion. But Carnival is getting, Firm Sounds getting ready for Carnival, and the theme is toys.
You know what? I would come on your show more often, but I feel objectified by Scott. No, seriously, he has a weird crush on me. Don't you know that?
He does. I know that. I'm aware. I find it distasteful.
He's a weird man crush, and I don't know. It's a little creepy.
It is a little creepy, because you're a handsome man. He loves a handsome man. You know, my mom thinks he's gay, but he's not, as you know. Isn't he gay? He has a tremendously beautiful and wonderful, smart wife. It's weird. He does have a weird Don Lemon fixation.
He's gay-ish.
Gayish, yeah. Yeah. So I will have you on when he's not around. How about that?
All righty.
Because I don't want you to feel objectified, Don Lemon, because I think you're in your prime again.
And so are you, my dear. So are you.
They're going to be so mad. Why didn't you? You know what? He made a mistake. Thank you. Let's move on.
Come on and apologize for it. Look at the, I don't know if it's, well, that's a whole nother story, but come on. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I own what I do.
Anyway, you know, glass houses. That's what I say. Anyway, people, not everyone. I love you too. We'll be back on Tuesday with a break in Scott-free August. That's right. Scott can't quit us. Dot, I'm going to read us out. Today's show is produced by Lara Naiman, Zoe Marcus, and Taylor Griffin. Ernie Enderdot engineered this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for another breakdown of all things tech and business. And I'm so looking forward to the new reality show, When Life Gives You Lemons.
What do you mean you're going to read us out? Well, I don't know what that means. We'll do it live. We'll do it live.
Thanks, Don Lemon.
Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Whether you're exploring space, making pizza, or producing a podcast like this one here, chances are your team is marching into the AI-generated horizon. Atlassian Intelligence is unleashing a new era of teamwork. You can use Atlassian's AI-powered products for everything from brainstorming ideas to finding information to summarizing huge documents, all by using normal, everyday language. Atlassian AI-powered software like Jira and Confluence help teams accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how you can transform teamwork with the power of AI at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.